CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Mary Anastasia O'Grady writes the America's column. She's the America's editor for the editorial board of the Wall Street Journal. And we go to Cuba, to the waters off of Cuba, famous for fishing. If you read the 20th century literature, eventually you'll wind up reading about Hemingway and the big catch off of Cuba. However, Mary's writing about fishing here in the 21st century, and I learned for the first time ever that the regime in Cuba, the Castro regime now inherited by the kindred of Cain, makes fishing nearly impossible for Cuban citizens. Nearly impossible. Mary, a very good evening to you. Please help me understand why fishing is not banned but restricted so severely that people have to, I guess, black market fish off of their beaches. Good evening to you.
Well, good evening, John. The reason I wrote this column about how difficult it is for a Cuban to fish is because the international left is trying to get dollars flowing again to the Cuban regime through both remittances and more travel by Americans. You know, you can have your opinions about the embargo, whether it's good or bad or whatever. But the bottom line is that Cubans are starving. I mean, I should say malnourished. They're very thin. They have a shortage of food on the island. But allowing more dollars to flow through the traditional way of remittances and U.S. travel is just more dollars in the pockets of the regime itself. And so I was thinking when I wrote this that if the objective really is that Cubans should be able to eat, why not let them fish? And when you look into it, you find that for a Cuban to get a license that will allow them legally to fish either from the surf or in the ponds and lakes around the island is nearly impossible because the price of the license is so high and the Cuban income from any work that they could do on the island is far below that. So they basically cannot afford to buy the license and fish legally. And I should add that it's also illegal for a Cuban to have a boat, you know, because obviously boats would allow people to flee the island, and the regime has never wanted to allow that unless it's unleashing a migration crisis in the U.S. But no, under normal circumstances, they don't want people to be able to escape, so they don't let them own boats. So the Cubans can't go out in a boat and go fishing either. So here you have an island that is terribly short of food, and you have the international left saying that they're interested in helping them get more food. And I think, well, if that's the case, then why don't they rally for letting Cubans fish legally? And we haven't heard anything about that.
You remind me that years past, you wrote a column about a seamstress in Cuba who was persecuted by the regime. And this connects with the general understanding of how it works to be a Cuban citizen who is malnourished. Tell the story of the seamstress. What happened to her and how does it connect to the fishing licenses?
Well, let me set this up by saying the way it connects is that Cuba is a totalitarian government. It is not an authoritarian government like you have in, for example, Pinochet's Chile. And the difference is that in a totalitarian government, everything that exists belongs to the state. And that includes your children, your dinner, your sports life, your private life, everything. I mean, it is, the state is the center and the owner of all. And that includes the fish. And, you know, in the case of Sonia Garo, the seamstress I was talking about, she was a poor black woman, married, and she lost her job because she was a dissident. And she began to take in sewing at her home just to pay some of the bills to make ends meet. And she noticed that there were a lot of young Cubans, teenagers, preteens, in the streets around her house who were getting into trouble after school. So she and her husband started a kind of a rec center, like a recreation community center in their home. And they, her husband taught the children music, and she taught sewing. And the government arrested her for that and shut it down. And the reason was because if there was going to be a rec center, if there was going to be a place where children could go after school, it must be run by the state. The idea that a private citizen could donate their time and their home and their knowledge to help children, that had to be shut down immediately. And this connects to the phishing, because if a person can get food on their own independent of the state, or they can teach guitar lessons independent of the state, this is basically Cubans showing Cubans that they have agency, that they have some control over their own lives. And that has to be absolutely prohibited in a totalitarian system. Everything must come through the state. And again, going back to the fishing, you know, to allow someone just to go out and fish and feed their family, that cannot be allowed. It has to be run through the state. And of course, as I said, it would provide food, and the food would be secured outside of the ration program, outside of the political bosses who run your neighborhood. And they don't want that to happen. They don't want Cubans to have any independence from the state.
And the result is people are malnourished. They do not have opportunity or even money, and they don't have a future. Hence those protests of weeks past where the brutality was so obvious. I believe everyone condemned Cuba for that, for the Cuban regime, for the brutality. Has that continued, Mary? Because I'm surprised to learn there's such a thing as a Center for Free Cuba that is not identifying the problem is the brutes, not the fishermen.
Well, the Center for Free Cuba is based in the U.S., but I think the point here, the main point here, is that there is a movement outside of Cuba, an international left movement, and people who have signed this petition are people like Code Pink, groups like Code Pink, and Susan Sarandon, Danny Glover, Oliver Stone. And what they're lobbying for is they're saying Cuba is poor, Cuba is starving, and the reason is because the U.S. is not allowing untold amounts of dollars to flow into the pockets of the regime. Because if the regime had all this money, then maybe they would buy more food for the people, and they would be able to, counteract some of the results of the pandemic. And I find that a very strange point of view to take, given that when the regime receives, for example, dollar remittances, the dollars do not go to the Cuban people. They go to offshore bank accounts for the regime. And then they give worthless Cuban pesos and rations, monthly rations, to the Cuban people. So the idea that by getting more dollars flowing to the regime, you're going to help the Cuban people is ridiculous. In fact, the whole point of the sanctions is that you want fewer dollars flowing to the regime so that you can strengthen the hand of the protesters who are calling both for more food and for freedom. And so, you know, whose side are you on when you're lobbying for more money to be going into the pockets of the regime? Doesn't make sense.
I correct myself from my notes. The Center for Free Cuba is a benevolent organization looking in on the fishing law. I was trying to remember the Center for Democracy in the Americas. That's the petitioners who are blaming the U.S.
No. The Center for Democracy in the Americas is an NGO in the U.S. That used to be headed by Emily Mandrala. And Emily Mandrala is now the Biden administration State Department point person for Cuba. And the Center for Democracy in the Americas is very left-wing, right, and they have been complaining about the embargo for many months, I'm sorry, for many years, and they believe that basically denying dollars to the regime is why Cuba is poor. And my point is, this is not why Cuba is poor, and if you want to help Cubans, you should work to in favor of things that would liberate the Cuban people, and that's going to be far more effective than giving more dollars to the regime itself.
Mary Anastasia O'Grady, the America's editor and columnist for the Wall Street Journal editorial page. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batch.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.